I was all eagerness to see his face, but he kept it averted for some time while employed in unlacing his vest. This accomplished, however, he turned round, when, good heavens, what a sight! Such a face! It was of a dark, purplish yellow color, here and there stuck over with large, blackish-looking squares. Yes, it's just as I thought. He's a terrible bedfellow. He's been in a fight, got dreadfully cut, and here he is, just from the surgeon. But at that moment he chanced to turn his face so toward the light that I plainly saw they could not be sticking plasters at all, those black squares on his cheeks. They were stains of some sort or other. I remembered a story of a white man, a whaleman, too, who, falling among the cannibals, had been tattooed by them. I concluded that this harpooner, in the course of his distant voyages, must have met with a similar adventure. There was no hair on his head, none to speak of at least, nothing but a small scalp knot twisted up on his forehead. His bald, purplish head now looked for all the world like a mildewed skull. Had not the stranger stood between me and the door, I would have bolted out of it quicker than ever I bolted a dinner. I confess I was now as much afraid of him as if it was the devil himself who had thus broken into my room at the dead of night. Meanwhile, he continued the business of undressing, and at last showed his chest and arms. As I live, these covered parts of him were checkered with the same squares as his face. His back, too, was all over the same dark squares. He seemed to have been in a 30 years' war, and just escaped from it with a sticking plaster shirt. But there was no time for shuddering, for now the savage went about something that completely fascinated my attention, and convinced me that he must indeed be a heathen. But the interval I spent in deliberating what to say was a fatal one. Taking up his tomahawk from the table, he examined the head of it for an instant, and then holding it to the light, with his mouth at the handle, he puffed out great clouds of tobacco smoke. The next moment the light was extinguished, and this wild cannibal, tomahawk between his teeth, sprang into bed with me. I sang out. I could not help it now, and giving a sudden grunt of astonishment, he began feeling me. "Hui debil you," he at last said. "You no speaky, damn me, I killy." And so saying, the lighted tomahawk began flourishing about me in the dark. "Landlord, for God's sake, Peter Coffin!" shouted I. "Landlord, watch, Coffin, angels, save me!" "Speaky, telly me who he be, or damn me, I kill he," again growled the cannibal, while his horrid flourishings of the tomahawk scattered the hot tobacco ashes about me until I thought my linen would catch on fire. But thank heaven, at that moment the landlord came into the room light in hand, and leaping from the bed I ran up to him. "Don't be afraid now," said he, grinning again. "Queequeg here wouldn't harm a hair of your head." "Stop your grinning," shouted I. "And why didn't you tell me that that infernal harpooner was a cannibal?" "I thought he knowed it. Didn't I tell ye? He was a peddling heads around town. But turn flukes again and go to sleep. Queequeg, look here. You savvy me, I savvy you. This man sleepy you. You savvy?"
"Me savvy plenty," grunted Queequeg, puffing away at his pipe and sitting up in bed. "You giddy in," he added, motioning to me with his tomahawk and throwing the clothes to one side. He really did this in not only a civil but a really kind and charitable way. I stood looking at him for a moment. For all his tattooing, he was on the whole a clean, comely-looking cannibal. "What's all this fuss I have been making about?" thought I to myself. "The man's a human being just as I am. He has just as much reason to fear me as I have to be afraid of him. Better sleep with a sober cannibal than a drunken Christian." "Landlord," said I, "tell him to stash his tomahawk there, or pipe, or whatever you call it. Tell him to stop smoking, in short, and I will turn in with him. But I don't fancy having a man smoking in bed with me. It's dangerous. Besides, I ain't insured." This being told to Queequeg, he at once complied, and again politely motioned me to get into bed, rolling over to one side as much to say, "I won't touch a leg of ye." "Good night, landlord," said I. "You may go." I turned in and never slept better in my life. Upon waking next morning about daylight, I found Queequeg's arm thrown over me in the most loving and affectionate manner. I now strove to rouse him. "Queequeg!" But his only answer was a snore. I then rolled over, my neck feeling as if it were in a horse collar, and suddenly felt a slight scratch. Throwing aside the counterpane, there lay the tomahawk, sleeping by the savage's side, as if it were a hatchet-faced baby. A pretty pickle, truly, thought I, a bed here in a strange house in the broad of day, with a cannibal and a tomahawk. "Queequeg! In the name of goodness, Queequeg, wake!" He jumped out upon the floor, and by certain signs and sounds gave me to understand that, if it pleased me, he would dress first and then leave me to dress afterwards, leaving the whole apartment to myself. Thinks I, Queequeg, under the circumstances, this is a very civilized overture. He commenced dressing at top by donning his beaver hat, a very tall one, by the by, and then, still minus his trousers, he hunted up his boots. Seeing now that there were no curtains to the window, and that the street being very narrow, the house opposite commanded a plain view into the room, and observing more and more the indecorous figure that Queequeg made, staving about with little else but his hat and boots on, I begged him as well as I could to accelerate his toilet somewhat, and particularly to get into his pantaloons as soon as possible. The rest of his toilet was soon achieved, and he proudly marched out of the room, wrapped up in his great pilot monkey jacket, and sporting his harpoon like a marshal's baton.